Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival, and I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, August 3rd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, August is not a good month so far, one day into the trading week, and we have gold looking down $9. Of course, they only took that down here in the last hour or so. It was down a couple bucks most of the day, didn't move and until the last hour of trade. Kind of sounds like a song, the last hour of trade. 1,087, silver's down 28 at 1,461. That was pretty stable for most of the day. Platinum was down 21 at 966, and we have palladium down 11 at 603. The USDX today was up 0.30 at 97.49, and crude oil today got battered. It was down 1.67 at 45.45, and of course it slid to a six-month low. And again, you know, this isn't much news, but it's again the oversupply with the slowing demand in China. And, of course, with the pressure of perhaps the Iranian oil coming online, 500,000 barrels per day. And as soon as the sanctions are lifted, you'll be adding another million barrels per day within months. This is what their oil minister has said. So you'll have the Chinese manufacturing activity stalled in July. And, of course, demand here in the States, and they're also weakened on an official survey that was taken on Saturday. So you had about a 15% drop in Chinese stock markets from this quarter. And so you have a lot of these huge hedge funds and speculators where they slash their exposure to U.S. crude or the WTI to the lowest in nearly 5 years. And this comes out. But you still have local drillers. They're continuing to add rigs and pump at full throttle despite the old global oil glut. So go figure. Well, you know, builders have to build and oil drillers have to drill oil. So, you know, maybe that's all part of it. Paper markets today had some pressure put on it. You had the Dow down 91 points at 17,598. Excuse me, NASDAQ down 12 at 51.15, S&P down 5 at 20.98, 10-year yield dropping 2.15% on the yield, at 0.06 to the downside. Euro 110, still maintaining. There's not a lot of change in the Euro 110, 111, but it was down 0.54 today. And let's see if there's any else interesting, anything else that is interesting. Europe was up over 1%. Everything else was pretty flat across the Asian markets and the other European countries. I guess Greece continues to bleed out as they were opened their stock market. And although it did come back, I think it was down initially 30%, and it came back to like down 15 to 17%. But, still, what'd you expect after it was closed for 3 weeks? So I guess it's not much surprise there, Al.
Well, there's actually quite a bit of, there's a lot of interesting information on it. There's an article from CNBC, Bloodbath Ahead as Greek Stocks Plummet on Opening. On open, there's the headline. The Athens Stock Exchange opened nearly 23% lower after reopening for the first time in 5 weeks.
They did dip 30, though, I believe. But go ahead.
Well, the banks went 30.
Mm-hmm.
The market itself was down 23%. The banks went down 30%, which is the daily limit. All right, the banks maxed out. And that means that except for the daily limit, bank stocks might have fallen more than 30% today. More, this implies that the bank stock may continue to fall tomorrow when the Greek market stock market opens again. Now, maybe it will, maybe it won't. We don't know that. But in theory, by the close of Greek stock market tomorrow, you might be able to buy stock in Greek banks for 40%, maybe 50%, maybe even 60%, less than it was selling for just over a month ago. Similar losses were seen in other stocks outside the banking industry as well. Chairman of Hellenic Capital Markets Commission told CNBC ahead of the open that his commission would monitor the market closely. He said there would be no state intervention into the market. If it fell, it fell. Okay? But
what do you call restrictions?
Have been put in place to stem capital flight.
Yeah.
More than that, local investors still face restrictions that reflect the continuing capital controls on Greek banks that limit withdrawals to 60 euros a day. This means that domestic investors can only buy shares with fresh money from abroad or cash they have on hand. After months of austerity, I doubt that there is much cash on hand in Greece. We've been advised by Baron Rothschild in years, century or more ago, a couple of centuries, 1800, there have been the 1800s, to buy stocks, bonds, land, factories, whenever the blood is running in the streets. That's the time to buy. When everything is complete chaos, people are in such a panic that they'll sell whatever they own for a fraction of its real worth. So that's when you buy. Well, the blood is running in the streets of Athens. Greek stock prices are collapsing, but thanks to capital controls, the Greek people can't take advantage of the lower prices. The markets, for example, the banks dropped 30% today, bank stocks. All right, maybe that's a heck of a deal. Maybe if the Greek people themselves said, wait a second, this is a heck of a deal. We could buy our own banks. We could get a percentage in the banks. We could profit from this. But because of the financial controls that have been imposed by the Greek government, the Greek people can't take advantage of the falling stocks in their own country because they only have access to 60 euros a day. Foreign investors may freely trade, however. All right? Result, foreign entities will be able to buy up Greek stocks for up to 30% less than they cost 1 month ago. Greece is for sale. Cheap. Imagine that the United States suffered a similar financial decline thanks to capital controls, restricting your access to your money in your bank accounts, folks. You couldn't get more than $100 a day out of your bank account. Suppose that happened here in this country. At the same time, the stock market was collapsing. the blood would be running in the streets, but you wouldn't be able to take advantage of it and buy at cheap prices. Instead, foreign investors could buy American stocks and America itself, perhaps, cheap. You wouldn't be able to take advantage of the fire sale in U.S. stocks unless you had a source of savings that was not kept in a U.S. bank. That source of savings could be your stack of gold or silver coins. The article continues. It says, given that the International Monetary Fund, one of the country's lenders, has threatened to pull out of the third bailout package with Greece, of course, without debt relief granted to Greece, the bailout itself is looking increasingly shaky. Countries like Germany opposed debt relief for Greece, fearing that it would set precedents for other indebted Eurozone countries. Time is the essence. There's a 3.2 billion euro repayment due to the European Central Bank on August 20th, a little over 2 weeks from now. They're trying to talk the creditors into granting them another 86 billion, if I understand correctly. And now we're at a debating phase. Should we or should we not? This thing drags on and drags on. But the one thing that seems apparent to me is that the creditors don't want to let Greece file for bankruptcy. All right? It strikes me, I get the impression, that's what the creditors are really afraid of. As long as Greece, one way or another, continues to make some kind of payment, even if they have to borrow the money from their creditors to pay back some of the money they already owe to the creditors, they can maintain the illusion that they're not bankrupt, they're still solvent, and so long as that illusion is maintained, the underlying debt can be presumed to be valid. All right? And I think that's the real objective of the creditors. And it's not necessarily to collect the debt. I think it's because the consequences... Right now, Greece, if I understand correctly and I recall correctly, their total debt, the Greek government's total debt, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $540 billion, or euros, excuse me, $540 billion. If we were to speculate and guess that the creditors who had loaned that currency to Greece, and they had $540 billion in Greek bonds, what did they do with those bonds? They probably deposited them in a bank vault, and they are using them as collateral to make additional loans to consumers and stimulate the European economy. Under fractional reserve banking, they may be able to lend out as much as anywhere from 10 to perhaps as much as 20 times. I think I've heard that European banks can lend up to 23 times the amount of money they have kept in the vault. If they've got a security for $1,000, they can lend out $23,000. They got a security for $100,000, they can lend out, $2.3 million, or we'd say euros. But the point is, there's a multiplier in this, that if they have to declare these bonds void, there's going to be a big multiplied impact on the European economy. And I think that's what they're scared of. I think they're scared. I don't know how many of the bonds are being used as collateral for other debts, but if it turns out that collateral is worthless, and that's what happens if they actually go to bankruptcy. They have to declare these things are worthless, officially, finally, ultimately, irrevocably worthless. Right now, they can go through a haircut, where the creditors will, all right, fine, we'll cut the debt by 50% or 60% or 30%. But they can reach an agreement, but that doesn't affect the validity of the underlying bonds. The bonds are still deemed to be functioning. The haircut doesn't destroy the bonds. It makes them smaller, but it doesn't destroy them. And they can still be used, I suspect, under fractional reserve banking to justify the extension of loans to people in the European economy. But if they go to bankruptcy and the bankruptcy court says, okay, that's it, you're done, you don't have to pay these bills anymore, those debts become worthless. And they, I believe, I suspect that through fractional reserve banking, the multiplied effect might be devastating. And I think that's why they're, whatever they're doing, they don't want bankruptcy. They'll go for haircuts. They'll go for there's another one down here, another article we have along the same line. They have another word they're using. Oh, it's Puerto Rico. There's an article on Puerto Rico in here. Let's see. What did they say? Puerto Rico will fail to make August 1st payment, signaling default. Now, here's what's interesting about it. The governor's chief of staff said on Friday that an event like that will be considered a default by investors as the Commonwealth lurches toward what could be one of the largest U.S. municipal debts restructuring. They're going to restructure. Not going to bankruptcy, we're going to restructure. Restructure is unofficial. It's the creditor and the debtors get together and say, okay, we'll only charge you 50% of what you really owe. That's not a bankruptcy. They're trying to stay. Restructuring is good. Bankruptcy is bad. Puerto Rican Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla shocked investors when he said the island's debt totaling $72 billion was unpayable and required restructuring. What are we talking about here, Melody? We're talking about the same idea I've been jabbering about for 5 years. What can't be paid won't be paid. We're seeing, we've got an article that it started with, Bloodbath Ahead in Greece. They can't pay their debt. We've got another one we're reading right now from Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico can't pay its debt. We got another one that we'll get to a little later on Ukraine. Ukraine can't pay its debt. We got another one on state pension plans, which indicate that the state pension plans will not, on average, be able to pay their debts in full. All right? There is a common theme here, and we're seeing it in Europe and Puerto Rico and states within the United States and the Ukraine. And we're going to see it in a lot of places where we finally face up to the fact that there is more debt in this world than anyone can possibly repay. It can't be repaid. This has been one of the fundamental arguments from my perspective on why you should own gold and silver. Most of the existing debt instruments can't be paid. And sooner or later, we're going to face that fact. And when we read headlines on the same day from Greece and Ukraine and Puerto Rico and state pensions, and I don't doubt there's more besides that, it indicates to me that the frequency of default is rising. And what that tells me is that we have reached nearly a point where the world is going to have to face up the fact we can't pay all the debt. And when we get to that fact, when we get to that point, it means that everyone who's holding the debt instruments is going to lose some or all of their investment. Not just 10% or 5%, they're going to lose 80, 90% of their paper investments. And this is one of the reasons, from my perspective, why you grab onto gold, grab onto silver, especially now when the prices are at irrationally low levels, and you hang on tight. Not just because gold is good, silver is good, but because the paper is so extraordinarily dangerous. All of the paper debt instruments. Got a piece of paper, says it's worth $100,000, a bond, a stock, whatever. Somebody signed his name to it. Most of them can't be paid. This is the house of cards. And those of you who get a hold of this idea are going to realize, wait a second, if I want to save my money, I've got to put it into something tangible, not paper. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners we still have some of those beautiful AU $20 Liberty gold pieces. They're just great for you bullion buyers. If you'd like to diversify your portfolio, step up a little bit, step up and receive some of the additional benefits that you'll receive with the AU $20 Liberty gold pieces. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got a lot of mixed dates that are available on these coins, and the price includes all your shipping costs. And give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got free silver eagles in there with that $1,300. Give us a call. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can listen to our radio programs are archived there on a daily basis. So we're going to have some pretty neat articles in the newsletter, along with Al's and Wendy's, and we put Lori Roth's in there. And someone sent me a great little article on the art of shorting. And, of course, it shows how these stocks, not just gold, but how so many other stocks are being manipulated through the venue of shorting the market, and how it's done by these huge hedge funds, and how they do it in concert with various media and blogs. And, you know, again, that's why it always amazes me how there's so many articles and so forth. There's so many websites that pop up. No one puts names to anything. And somehow, some way, I would think a lot of them are so interconnected, you really don't even know who you're talking to, who you're buying from, who you're talking to. And, you know, all the writings are all kind of geared to make certain things happen. You really don't know what side the writer is on. You know, he could be telling you to do something, and on the, you know, he could tell you to be going short, and on, you know, he might be going long on the deal, or, you know, he might be, so, you know, it's powerful psychology manipulation also when it comes to the markets in today's world. And, you know, we talk about that with gold, the psychology, and so this is will probably be in next week's weekly newsletter, so make sure you sign up at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we'll talk a little bit about on the program. I'll probably save it maybe for Thursday when I do the program for my 20 minutes prior to Alfred and James Corbett. So we'll talk about that.
When we broke, I was talking about Puerto Rico as another instance of the debt. Another entity that's unable to pay its debt. Cyprus was the first one, 2012 to 2013, and that debt still hasn't been paid or resolved. Cyprus is still in the midst of great austerity now as the creditors try to virtually crush Cyprus. Greece is facing the same problem. Here's Puerto Rico. They're going to get a dose of it. And as I mentioned, Ukraine is in the same thing. We'll get to them in a minute. I just want to go through the article on Puerto Rico will fail to make August 1st payment signaling default. Now, this is interesting because Puerto Rican Governor Padilla shocked investors when he said they had a total debt of $72 billion that was unpayable. He's not saying, look, we're going to have to put it off a little bit. He's saying we can't pay it. Not now, tomorrow, anytime soon. He required restructuring, which means the creditors must agree. Without going to bankruptcy court, the creditors must agree that they, instead of $72 billion, they'll settle for $36 billion. All right? Or maybe $40 billion, or maybe $20 billion. But some number less than $72 billion. That's what's restructuring. It's an agreement out of court, an agreement before you ever get to bankruptcy court, and it prevents the bankruptcy court from rendering the debt completely void. And here are the, now they're short $72 billion. But tomorrow is August 1st, and we don't have the money. Victor Suarez, chief of the staff for Puerto Rico governor, told journalists in San Juan, referring to a $58 million payment due on public finance corporation bonds. They're in debt for $72 billion, but they can't pay $58 million. That's less than 1% of what they owe, which is a very good indication that they are in deep, deep trouble. They're not just going to, oh, we're having a little problem here and we can't get $72 billion. We got $70 billion. We don't have $72 billion. No, that's not what they're saying. They don't even have $58 million. All right, that's the implication here. The down payment would be the most notable since Detroit, which had about $8 billion in bonds and defaulted on $1.45 billion of insured pension bonds before it filed for bankruptcy in 2013. The bank would, let me get on, roll through this a little bit. Suarez told reporters in San Juan on Wednesday that a missed payment would not constitute a default. This isn't a default. Doesn't mean they're bankrupt. Just because they owe $72 billion and they can't come up with $58 million, it does not mean that they're bankrupt. This is not a default. Bond documents state that Puerto Rico's legislature is not legally bound to appropriate the funds for the payment. However, credit ratings say agency Standard & Poor's said earlier this week it would view non-payment of rated PFC bonds on their due date as a default. Moody's said it would also consider it a default. The government said, oh, it's not a default. We're just not paying our bills. Credit agency, yeah, it's a default. You're not paying your bills. That's what a default is. Our reading of legal documents is that bondholders have very limited remedies, said David Hitchcock, an analyst at Standard & Poor's. Puerto Rico could potentially just ignore the bondholders. I wonder how many bondholders here in the United States, how many people have U.S. Treasury notes, Treasury bonds, Treasuries? whatever. How many of you have read all the fine print? How many of you understand what your remedies might be? In Puerto Rico, bond owners have the legal documents. Our reading of the legal documents is that bondholders have very limited remedies. I wonder what your remedies are if you're holding bonds right now, ladies and gentlemen, here in the continental United States. Puerto Rico is part of the United States, but it's territory of the United States. But, you know, Puerto Rico could potentially just ignore the bondholders. Puerto Rico could just ignore the bondholders. Do you think the government of the United States could also just ignore the bondholders? That seems almost impossible, extremely hard to believe, but is there a technical reason why Puerto Rico can ignore the bondholders and the United States cannot? I don't know. But this is another one of these reasons I look at and I say, this is a good idea. Get yourself some gold, get yourself some silver, because at least you've got it, and it's not up to someone else to say whether they will or they will not ignore your gold, your silver. They can't just ignore your claim, your attempt to get your wealth back. Puerto Rican Justice Secretary Cesar Miranda said they'd been anticipating any type of litigation that this situation may cause. We have been organizing ourselves, using internal resources when we can and external ones when necessary to defend against any claim that is made. What they mean is if a bondholder says, hey, I invested this. I trusted you. I gave you $100,000 or $1 million or whatever, and now you're saying you can't pay me. I want that money back. I'm going to take you to court to get the money. And the government is saying they're going to defend against any claim that's made. They're not just going to say, gee, we're having a tough time. They are going to defend against the bondholders' claims. Which means they don't have any respect for those claims. They're not going to come up and say, gee, could you wait another week? Could you wait another month? They are going to defend against the claims, which gives us a clue to the mentality of at least the government of Puerto Rico. You know, and perhaps governmental debtors around the world. Go ahead. Try to collect your money. They're going to defend against it. If you've got a government bond, see if you can collect. I'm not saying that you can't collect in U.S. Treasuries right now. I get that. But I'm just saying that we're seeing a number of countries at the same time facing this debt problem, and you can't sit back and just suppose it's never going to happen here, or even suppose it's not going to happen here for 5 years or 3 years. They might be able to string it out another year or two. I don't know, but it might also go up in smoke this year. It's hard to know what's really going on here. Here's another article from Reuters. Ukraine sees end of next week as absolute deadline for debt deal. All right. Now, this just kind of cracks me up. Ukraine sees the end of next week as the absolute last deadline. That's a quote.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, we're all getting to the app. This is it. I mean it, Melody.
This is
the last day. All right, and you guys better cut that deal and restructure the debt, because come Friday, that's it. It's not just the deadline. It's not just the last deadline. It's the absolute last deadline. You understand that? You know, it just gets comical after a while. But Ukraine sees the end of the next week as the absolute deadline for debt restructuring deal with its bondholders to avoid imposing a moratorium on payments. This is the word I was looking for before. I thought it was in the Puerto Rico article. It's in the Ukrainian article. They're not going to have a default. And they're not going to file for bankruptcy. They're
going to
just have a moratorium, see? That's different. See, if I owed you $1,000 and I promised to pay you by noon today and I didn't pay it, well, it wouldn't be a default, silly. That would be a moratorium. And that makes all the difference in the world. Now, you can see that they're using language in order to evade the implications of a default. Puerto Rico says it's not a default. The government says, oh, just because we're not paying, it's not a default. And the credit rating agency says, oh, yes, it is. And here's Ukraine's, oh, it's not a default, it's just a moratorium. Imposing a moratorium on payments is fancy language for having a debt default that proves Ukraine to be insolvent and bankruptcy and bankrupt. Debt restructuring means an agreement by creditors with borrowers to voluntarily reduce however much money the borrower currently owes in order to prevent, avoid admitting that the borrower is bankrupt and therefore voiding the entire debt. The article continues. It says the source said that new restructuring proposals submitted by a group of Ukraine's biggest creditors does not represent a better deal for Kiev than a previous plan because all of the conditions attached to it. What's that like? It's like Greece. Greece fumbled around arguing with the creditors for I don't know how long, playing this game, until now they've got themselves in such a bind that the creditors are saying you've got to surrender the levers of power. And financial power in particular, in your country to the creditors, because you, if you want any more money in order to maintain the illusion, you want us to lend you more money so you can pay us back part of the money that you already owe us, you want to maintain the illusion of solvency, you're going to have to surrender some of the Greek sovereignty, you're going to have to surrender property, you're going to have to surrender financial levers of power. Right? And now they're doing this. Guess what? Here we see evidence that the same thing is happening to Ukraine. Right? The end of next week is the absolute last deadline. I already cracked up on that one. To agree on terms of a deal with the IMF program targets if a moratorium on September 2015 payment and other bond payments is to be avoided. They need to avoid the moratorium, but not as much as they need to avoid the default. Kiev has threatened to halt payments, but not declare bankruptcy. Kiev has threatened to halt payments if creditors fail to agree to a restructuring. You got to agree that I don't owe you. I know I borrowed $500,000, but you must agree that I only owe you $250,000. If you don't agree to that, then I'm going to halt payments on the $500,000. The article continues. They're talking about a 5% haircut. That's the deal that they're looking for. That's the deal that the creditors are offering, a 5% haircut, and if it works out, another 5% later on. That's a total of 10%. Creditors said, okay, we'll take a 10% haircut maximum. 5% probably, maybe 10%. If Ukraine only needs a 10% haircut to get by, they're not really in trouble. All right? This isn't about 10%. As the article continues, it points out Ukraine said last week it had sent fresh proposals to creditors, but it's unclear if these amend the original desire for a 40% write-down. Ukraine needs a 40% write-down. They need the creditors to agree to a 40% haircut. And the creditors are saying, well, we'll give you 5%, maybe 10 if you're good, but you've got to agree to surrender levers of power to us. So they're getting their take. They're having a problem in the Ukraine that's almost identical to what we are seeing in Greece.
Which makes me wonder, why would the European Union, you know, allow Ukraine to become? Well, they're not quite a member. They did sign some parts, the political part, the economic part, with the European Union agreement and so forth, but I don't think they're an actual member yet of the whole deal. I don't think they're using the euro yet. Why would they allow and want to absorb a country like Ukraine? I mean, that was the problem with Greece.
You say,
I mean,
would they want to absorb
Greece? Greece lied about their conditions to get into the European Union, and how well did it work out for them? So how well is this going to work out for Ukraine?
Well, that's part of the point here. Here's the problem, though. I don't know if anybody wants Ukraine. It's so badly indebted that I'm not sure anyone...
So why are they even bothering?
Russia will take it. If NATO and the United States said, we're out of here, you guys are more trouble than you're worth, Russia's going to say, great. And there are people in Ukraine
who will vote to
work with Russia.
It would go back to the way it was.
No, maybe. How is it going to go back to the way it was when it's flat broke? If the NATO and the IMF and the United States isn't going to fund Ukraine, who will? They leave them hanging. The Russia will come in and say, listen, we can give you a handful of rubles. What do you say? They'll take it. They'll take the deal because they will be that badly impoverished. Should we take a break, Melody?
Sure.
Commercial time, ladies and gentlemen. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Oh, are you finished?
Well, I guess I am or I can be or we can continue. I didn't know where you wanted to go with this. Here's another article on state pension plans putting politics above retirement. Now, what they're coming up, the point to this article is that state pension plans throughout the United States, not all of them, but a lot of them, and a significant amount of those surveyed, they're only funded on average 72%, which means, and that's as of 2013. Which means that if the retirees right now said, okay, I'm entitled to $3,000 a month. And I've been paying in, I've been working for the government, and I expected I was going to get $3,000 a month through my retirement. Well, maybe not. Maybe you're only going to get about $2,000 a month because, guess what? They didn't fund almost 30%. And that's as of 2013, which is another variation on the same idea that the debt can't be paid. We have too much debt. I saw one report just lately, and many of you have seen the same thing, and some of them, the estimates are higher, speaking of the value of derivatives. At least a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives out there. Those derivatives are some kind of a debt instrument. Now, they may be conditional debt instruments. They don't necessarily one quadrillion is what they might cost under certain circumstances. Under other circumstances, maybe not so much. But the exposure is at least a quadrillion, and some people say it's much more than that. It's more debt than the world can pay. If we hit the button that makes the derivatives say, uh-oh, somebody got to pay on the derivatives, guess what? They're not going to be paid. Can't be paid. Too much debt. All right? And this is the problem the world faces right now. The debt is too enormous. It can't all be paid. And again, talked about it earlier in the program, talked about it a number of times over the past several years. The debt is too big to be repaid. And that means if you're holding those paper debt instruments, on average, you are going to lose your assets, or at least a lot of them. All right? And in my estimation, 80 to 90% on average. You may have a piece of paper that'll turn out to be valuable. You get paid in full, it might happen. But on average, my guesstimate, 80 to 90% of those debt instruments will turn out to be worthless. And that's why, from my perspective, it's dangerous to hang on to. It's dangerous to hang on to invest your wealth in paper debt instruments, except perhaps on a short-term speculative basis. But you're taking a risk. If this thing goes south where you're holding the paper, it's like playing old maid. You get caught with the old maid in your hand, ha, 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 you lost, you know? So in any case, there's this article dealing with state pension plans, and what they're talking about is that they found out, they did a study, and it turns out that your state pension plan funds tend to invest in stocks of corporations that have political connections and political influence. Huh? They don't just go out there and look in the market and say, well, let's see, that's a good corporation. No, I don't want to invest in that one, but that one looks like pretty good right there. The other one, I don't know. This one, yeah, there's another good one. This is good. They're not selecting the stocks in which to invest the government workers' pension funds based on whether the stock is financially viable and attractive. They're basing it to a significant degree on whether the stock is owned by, is in a corporation that has political connections. All right? And it turns out, they go on, the article says, what's more, these investments aren't winners. This bias toward in-state politically connected firms costs the typical state pension fund about $225 million in annual decline in fund performance. They're not talking $225 million for all the funds. They are talking $225 million per fund on average, state fund, all right, per year. This is an enormous loss. This is a transfer of wealth from the idiots who worked for the government and trusted the government to run its pensions funds. They put their money into the pension funds, and the government didn't, the taxpayers did. And where's it going? It's going to politically connected corporations that aren't good investments. Which means I could set up a corporation, and if I were sufficiently connected politically to legislators here in Texas, my corporation might be worth diddly. But if I can get them to buy my stock, I can profit. Even though my corporation, I know it's worthless, it's a shell corporation. I'm exaggerating here to make a point, of course. I'm not going to argue that the state is buying just, that the pension funds are buying just shell corporations, but they are buying. They could do better. They point out the aggregate ratio of U.S. public pension funds was only 72% of liabilities in 2013. That leaves more than $1 trillion of future liabilities unfunded nationwide. It means the retirees from government who think they're going to get X number of dollars for their retirement, they're actually going to be $1 trillion less than what they've been led to believe. $1 trillion less than what they had expected. And that's assuming that these corporations that the pension funds are investing in don't go broke and just leave them hanging. It's 72%, they're gonna lose 28% as of 2013. Here we are, 2015. Good chance that they're going to lose even more. And if these politically connected corporations go down, it may the hard to say how large the losses can become. It's here. Interestingly, the only local companies that the pension funds invested in that displayed significant positive outperformance, in other words, made a profit, were non-politically connected local firms. According to the study, all of the politically connected firms, they didn't do very well. They may have been net losers. The only ones that the pension funds did invest in that actually generated a profit were the ones that weren't politically connected. You see what that means? It's just another evidence that if government can't screw something up, it can't be screwed up. When government gets into it, you get the politics into it, somebody's going to get robbed. Politics is largely a racket. Well, the state pension funds tend to hold on to the state. I'm not going to go any further into it right now. It's about the end of the article. But the point is, the politically connected corporations aren't politically connected because they are good, solid businesses. They are connected because they are hustlers, con artists, and to some degree, a kind of quasi-criminal enterprise who believe that by giving money to legislators at the state level or at the federal level, they can generate unearned profits for themselves. And that has been the way our markets have functioned in to significant degree for the last generation, and maybe more than that. If you want to compete to make your corporation profitable, where do you compete? In the free market? Of course not. You compete in the halls of Congress, and you compete by paying bribes to legislators who will pass laws that will give your industry or your corporation special tax advantages or restrict competition or whatever to help you maintain your profits without actually having to compete. And the ones who are best able to bribe the congressmen, the senators, perhaps presidents, those are the ones that tend to get people buy their stocks, at least pension funds buy their stocks, even though they are worth less than the stocks of corporations that are not politically corrected. And it makes perfect sense, because if you got a corporation that's worried about, let's get our political connections established so we can sell more stock, that's not a corporation that's worried about efficiency. It's not trying to build a better mousetrap. It's saying we'll use the same old mousetrap, but we'll bribe Congressman Smith to pass a law that mandates that everybody's got to buy the same old mousetrap. See? And now we can get rich. Result, whoever's investing in that corporation, because it's politically connected, has a higher probability of losing their investment. If you wanted to invest in a corporation that was most likely to survive and do well, look for one that's not politically connected. Interesting. What do you think, Melody?
Yes, it is interesting. But the whole system is all set up for the corruption.
I know.
And, you know, when I talked about when we talk about the shorting, the manipulations, and it's just not in gold, it's in everything.
Uh-huh.
And the corruption is so huge. And when you really start knowing and understanding the details of what the Wall Street and these shares are made up of, I mean, there's nothing underneath them.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just totally incredible. Here was an interesting article. They appointed a new guy at the Barry Kovac. He was joining the FINRA, and FINRA is a private corporation, and it regulates brokerage firms and exchange markets. And he absolutely said he wouldn't represent investors. He's representing the brokerage houses. Yeah. And the whole point of this whole thing is of FINRA is to protect basically both, but also the investor. So here you have this guy working, and then he's in this system where the people that are going to be arbitrating this in some sort of a forum is run by the same people they are suing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just complete insanity.
It's not exactly insanity. We were talking about it during the break, or maybe prior to the program. I don't recall which. We're talking about what's going to happen to Ukraine. Ukraine is going to continue to be an impoverished nation because Ukraine has been corrupt from top to bottom for decades. That's the fundamental problem. They're a bunch of gangsters and thugs. All right? They're a bunch of criminals. And if you're going to elect crooks, if you are dumb enough to elect crooks, guess what? You are going to be robbed. And that same principle applies not only to Ukraine, it applies in this country. If you folks are going to continue to elect the congressmen and senators that you've elected over the past decade or more, going to continue to elect them? They have the smile that you're looking for, the persona, the personality. Is that what you want? You are going to have a hard time pointing to a congressman, senator, or president who isn't part of the racket. And if you can find any of them up there who are honest men that aren't profiting from the racket, you're not going to find many who have the courage to stand up and expose the racket. And as long as that's the case, you keep voting for these incumbents. Guess what? You're voting for more crooks. You keep voting for more crooks. They're either crooks or crook wannabes or people who don't care about crooks. And if you want to vote for more and more representatives, legislators, politicians who have no real sense of ethics, who don't mind crooks and criminality, you are going to be robbed, and you are going to wind up just as impoverished as the people in the Ukraine. And when it happens, you're not going to have a viable complaint. You're not going to be able to say, you weren't one of the good guys. You were one of the people who just winked at the crooks. It was fun to elect Al Capone to be your next president or whatever. It was a big joke. Well, you're going to pay for those jokes if you're dumb enough to make the joke. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I